So exciting.
Are you ready to do the show, or are you just going to fiddle around with your Mixler all day?
Oh, that sounds dirty.
Yeah. Sounds like fun.
I'm going to sit here and play with my Mixler.
Isn't that what you do every day?
What? All right. Okay, so should we start?
We can start whenever you're ready.
Are you recording?
I am recording. I have been recording.
Okay.
Unlike this new system, the other system's still down. We're working. We're fine.
Yeah, we're working out the kinks. So it's Tuesday. Yep. It's my favorite day of the week.
Because after the show, he gets to live his life.
That's right. I get to be done with you. And it's on Taking Pictures. This is beginning year four.
Can't believe we're in year four.
So if we were a comic book, somebody would have to die.
Okay. It's going to be you.
Why do I have to die?
You're older. It's thinning out the herd.
I'm closer. I'm closer anyway. So it's on Taking Pictures. We're here each and every week. I don't think we've missed a week, have we? Ever?
Nope. No. We've recorded a couple in 1 week to put them up the next week when one of us has been away. But other than that, no, we've got hit every week.
That's pretty
good. We're hardcore.
We are like that.
Yeah.
We're like that. My name is Jeffrey Sidoris from Faded and Blurred. And with me, the post.
I don't know. What is that?
Post lecture.
Lecturing. Yeah.
Post lecturing. Bill Wadman.
Yeah.
That was. How was that? Was it cool?
Yeah, it was fun. So for those of you who don't know, I spoke at Adorama here in New York last night. It was interesting. I had to do a 1 hour talk plus Q&A afterwards twice. So once at 4 and then, you know, so an hour plus a little bit for Q&A and then at 6 for an hour plus Q&A. And, you know, we do this show and you and I will talk for an hour and a half. But when you're up on stage and only you know, up in front of everyone and only you are talking for an hour, it's mentally and physically exhausting. I don't know how those people do it all day long. Like somebody on QVC for 8 hours or whatever, that would like just go nuts.
Are you going to go on QVC?
No, no. But it was fun, and they
are you going to sell Cookie Lee jewelry on?
Well, they recorded the 4 o'clock talk, and they're going to put it up online. So when I find that, I will share it with everyone who wants to see it. You know, a bunch of OT people came down, like the. You know, our friends from New Jersey, Hendrickson from Massachusetts, Adrian, what's his name? What's his last
Hernandez?
Name? Hernandez, yeah. He was there.
Did any of the Connors?
Was there.
Of the 42 Connors show
up?
Yeah,
Chris was there. we had a good time. And then afterwards, a bunch of us went out and had some food at a nice Belgian place. It was good. It was fun. It was interesting. The questions that I got asked are the things that people had, you know, issues with, right? It's like, you know what it is? You're never going to make everyone happy, right? This is the constant refrain. And there was one guy in the second talk who like kept stopping me and asking questions, and that's fine. You know, like I'll take the questions. But
like,
then
why do you keep shooting?
Yeah. Yeah. Why do you bother?
Why don't you stop?
And he was really funny because, you know, he would say things like, you know, I noticed, remember that, you know, that picture I took of my friend where, it's a girl arm wrestling a guy and she's beating the guy, you know?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So I had that
kind
one.
Of a ginger redhead.
Yeah.
Type thing.
Yeah. It's my friend Mary. Yeah. And, so I had that picture up there, and in the picture is a can of Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Right. Nice. Which, can't go wrong with the PBR.
Which I see as this. First of all, this was a non-commercial shoot. If I was shooting for some beer company, right, the beer thing would be in there. If I was shooting for like TV or something, you'd have to cover up the beer can, right?
You right. Know, or make it like Pabst,
yeah,
Brew
yeah,
right. Libin or right. something.
But yeah. Having it be one of the having it be the girl like beating the guy and they're all kind of young and whatever, I thought it would be funny to have the PBR actually in the shot because it's like the ultimate sort of hipster beer, right? you know, it helps sell the absurdity of like her.
Says the guy who's never tasted beer.
Fair enough. Well, I've tasted beer. I just don't drink it all that often. You know, but I thought that it just sort of added to the mystique, to the story of, you know, there's these hipsters, you know, arm wrestling. And the guy was really upset that he could see the label in my shot. And he was like,
seriously?
He kind of fixated on it for a little while. And I was like, really? Of all the stuff that you do? And then he says to me afterwards, he's just like, you know, I've noticed in a lot of your pictures, and it's funny because I went and looked at, I nodded my head as he was saying it because I didn't really, you know, I was just trying to hear him out. He was saying that I'll cut things off on the edge of my pictures where I'll have, you know, somebody's hand outside of the pictures or their, you know, torso or whatever it is, you know, whatever visually I think is interesting, that's what I'll do, right? And he was just like, you know, I'm in this camera club, and if we did that in the club, like, we'd get docked points for basically doing it wrong, right?
Doing what? Like just showing the label?
Yeah, no. That basically he was saying that in a lot of my pictures there are technical mistakes in the fact that I will cut off somebody's foot in the corner or something like that, right? Like I'll make these artistic choices that I'll just do because it looks good in the frame, but that, you know, apparently some other people would find have a problem with.
Right.
And I was sitting there and I'm just kind of like, well, I don't really think about the rules in my portraits that, you know, it has to be 3 inches below the crotch that you cut off because God forbid you cut off at their waist. It looks weird. It's like, well, I think it looks good at the waist. So I cut off at the waist, like no big deal. Right. And it got me thinking in two ways. First of all, it got me thinking that a few weeks ago when I judged that competition, now I'm thinking, oh my God, were these people all playing along rules that I wasn't judging them based upon? You know,
and should you have been?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Right. And then two, it's sort of like this thing of, are there any rules in any of this stuff? You know, and we got this email this week from a friend of the show, Lauren Shin, where she was talking about certification for photographers. Did you see this email?
I did.
Okay. So apparently, you know, you can join these organizations and take tests and get certificates and perhaps this will somehow, I don't know, this was a certified professional photographer through the PPA, right? When the PPA is what, the Professional Photographers of America Association, right? And it kind of got me thinking. I was like, okay, you know, there's things that you need rules and certification for. You know, if you're a surgeon, I want you to know, you know,
sure,
that you have.
If you're an engineer, if you're building buildings or bridges or.
Yeah. But I was thinking, what does it mean to be a certified artist in any way, and actually does that in any way make you a more dependable or correct artist, you know?
Right. I don't know. I don't think so.
Yeah. Because, I mean, according to this guy, I was breaking all kinds of rules. And I don't know if they're the same rules that the PPA would yell at me about if I took some certification, but, you know, and it's just like this sort of formalism, this very sort of Victorian. You know, there are rules to polite society and you are apprenticing within this guild and this is the knowledge that we've handed down, you know, all this kind of stuff, right?
Right. I went to high school with a guy who went on to go to Brooks in Santa Barbara, which is, for those of you who don't know, Brooks Institute of Photography, very famous, very well-respected school for photography. And, you know, he's doing great. He's got a giant studio. He does a lot of commercial work. But is that because he went to Brooks or is that just because he's a really good commercial photographer?
Right. Yeah. By the way, Randy Duchesne used to teach at Brooks.
Randy Duchesne is the man.
Yeah, he is. Right. It's that kind of stuff, right? And even now, I wonder how much all of that is changing. You know, I'm a member of ASMP, which is the American Society of Media Photographers, right? I think that's what it is. And ASMP, for most of its life, you had to be like an editorial photographer working for, you know, real magazines. And then you have to be asked to be a member by a current member, like one of those things, you know. Sure. And then you actually have to have a second person who is a member second your nomination. It's like one of those kinds of things, right? Like it's a little, it means something to be in ASMP because it you have to sort of be accepted by those people. It's not just like you sign up, right?
But do organizations like that still carry the same
weight?
Well,
that's my question.
With the advent of like citizen journalism.
Yeah.
Right. Or are they just matter anymore?
Are they just these weird anachronistic leftovers, these vestigial cliques, you know?
Right. Right.
And I don't.
They're the Cossacks of organizations.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know, it is, you know, I think about this kind of stuff and it's like, you know, is there some space for formalism in all of this stuff? You know, like does it, you know, back to Lauren's thing slightly, the certification stuff, it's like, well, you know what, I need pictures taken of my family or whatever it is. Oh, well, this person is a member of this big national organization, so they take their career more seriously, or you know what I mean? Like you can sort of make these inferences.
Doesn't that get us back to, it gets you back to the gear question too?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
The person that uses the Mark III is more serious than the person that uses the XE2,
yeah.
But then the person that uses the 4x5 or the Hasselblad is more serious. And all of it's just kind of kind of a farce.
Yeah. But it is entirely a farce in reality, in the sense that is it actually making a difference? Well, no, it's not actually making a difference in the sense that doesn't guarantee anything, right?
Right.
However, there are lots of people who will hire the guy with the fancy medium format camera because it looks fancier, whether or not their pictures are better, right? So there is some level of reality to it, whether or not there should be any reality to it. You know, does a magazine hire me because my thing says ASMP at the end of my bio? I don't know. You know, sure it doesn't hurt.
Do you use that when you're approaching a new client? Or
do I say I'm a member of ASMP?
Yeah. Or when you're looking for a new rep, I mean, does that carry any weight anymore? Or did it ever carry weight for you?
Well, see, the problem is most of the problem is that I was never came into this game so late, right? I mean, I think maybe if I got into this in the mid-90s when I was in college, I would know more about what was actually important, right? And I get asked to join other random associations' emails and stuff and other people I know who join things, and I don't generally do it just because I'm like, I don't want to pay the dues for that, you know?
Right.
ASMP, I was asked by somebody who was a member, and it was slightly a prestigious thing at the time. And I was like, absolutely, let's, you know, sure, that'd be great. Because then, you know, you also have they do all kinds of outreach work for copyright stuff where they raise money for legal battles and all that, you know, that kind of stuff.
Right, right.
They do that kind of stuff too. But yeah, does it add to my bottom line in some way? I don't know. I don't know if it does anymore, you know? Or if anybody who's doing this stuff now even cares, you know.
I wonder with so many of the sort of traditional news outlets closing, newspapers closing down, laying off staff photographers, that at one point having that sort of employee badge from, you know, the Chicago Sun-Times or whatever, that was your credential.
Yeah.
That said, I know what I'm doing, here's who I am.
Yeah.
What are those people doing now?
That's the interesting thing is that one of the things I do get from my SMP membership is I have a press card, you know? So theoretically I could go to a crime scene or something, you know what I mean? And like flash my press card and get in. I've never used it for that, but I guess I do have it because of that, which is kind of interesting. And then a few years ago, which is even more interesting, I think it was 2012 or 2013, They have these annual votes, right? You know, where they're like the rules that they want to change this year.
Sure.
And one of the rules they wanted to change was that they wanted to start allowing wedding and event photographers in.
Oh, so they weren't allowed?
No. It was only you had to be like published by major publications on a regular basis.
Oh, wow.
Like, so yeah, see, that's the thing, right? And they wanted to basically expand the user base to, I'm assuming, get the dues from more people to, you know, have more members to therefore have more lobbying power or whatever, you know, whatever the reasoning is.
What do any of these organizations offer in the way of a benefit to the photographer. And whether it's ASMP or WPPI, the, you know, that kind of thing.
Yep.
Is it real networking? Is it fake networking? Is it real opportunity? Is it fake opportunity? Do you make more money?
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't know that there's any quantifiable thing for that. I mean, like I was saying, the ASMP thing was as much a status thing, like, oh, I'm at the level where I'm accepted by these people who are at the level I want to be at. Thank you for allowing me into your skull and bone society, right? You
know? Right.
But the point at which, and this is not a rip on event photographers, but at the point at which you're bringing all these event photographers in, you're diluting what it means to be a member of that thing, right? If everybody's a member, then no one is. You know what I'm saying? So right. I remember when that vote was going on, I was like, no, why don't we just keep it to people who are editorial photographers? Because that's what this group was about, right? It's the American Society of Media Photographers. It's not the American Society of Photographers, you know? Like there are those things too.
So for you, that was kind of a fundamental change.
Yeah. I was just like, wait a minute. You just diluted everything. You're releasing a lot of the meaning behind the title, you know, being a member of this thing. I think it may have passed, and I haven't even checked, but,
Glad to see you're up on things.
But I remember at the time being just kind of like, you know what? That's just seems like a wrong move, you know, but people do this stuff. So, you know, Lauren was asking, like, you know, they say that it raises industry standards. What do you think? Do you think these organizations would raise industry standards?
I don't know enough about the organizations that are out there. And I think that the climate of media is changing so much and so rapidly.
Yeah.
That, you know, we touched on a little bit a couple weeks ago, the conversation with John Keatley's agent about the role of photographers. And it used to be that, yeah, you had to be able to light a scene and that was enough. But now, you know, there are so many other factors that play into it. You know, the kid that's got 500,000 followers on Instagram, does he have, you know, certification or training or any formal education in photography? No, he's got a great eye and a ton of people following him. Mm-hmm. And that's enough for some brands.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's going to be, more and more of sort of a truism as the industry changes, that it's not just what you bring to the table skills wise, it's what you bring to the table, how many eyes you bring to the table along with you.
Right. Right.
For certain types of photography.
Right. So, but, and a lot of this stuff kind of feels like, they want the certification because you got to pay the X fee to do it. And that's just, it's a money making thing as much as it is anything else, perhaps, you know, by the way, that site that we looked at last week where you can put up your kit,
ShotKit.
Yeah, you can submit your own, but if you get selected, it costs you $30 to get your stuff on there.
Oh, okay.
Yes. So even that's
in it. Yeah.
Right. Well. So all of these things just become, you know, this it's the same thing with the competitions, you know.
Right.
I get 3 emails a week from different competitions that want me to enter stuff. And you know what?
For a fee.
Right, it's all just making money, right? It's like, okay, I could spend $1,000 a year easy just entering stuff into competitions. And let's say something even gets past the, you know, first few rounds of the competition and ends up in the final set for whatever reason.
Right.
It's like, okay, but there are 300 competitions around the world. Who gives a crap who came in second or first even in some random, you know what I'm saying? Like there's just so much of it that each individual one means less and less every year.
Right.
You know,
it's sort of, you know, back in the 60s, there were the Oscars and that was it.
Yep.
And if you know, that was the prestige. You win an Oscar, that was something, but now there's the People's Choice and the Golden Globes and the this and the that.
Yeah. You know, right. And so I guess my answer to all this stuff is that it kind of feels like it's all, just a big take, right. You know, that these people are doing less for the world than they maybe used to and are trying to hold on and stay relevant, perhaps. You know, I feel awful
maybe
saying that, but there's definitely a sense of that, you know? Oh yeah. And then at the end of the same guy who was complaining to me that I break rules and would lose every competition at his photo club. In fact, I think it might be the photo club I did my judging at. So you know, maybe he disagrees with me, my judging the last week or whatever it was. But he said that I he's just like, your stuff looks very, what's it called? The guy who stuff I look, my stuff looks like.
Your stuff looks like somebody?
Yeah, the painter, you know, the my God, why am I having a, I'm blanking out the guy's name. You know, the
live
painter
radio,
from
folks,
the guy from Vermont whose pictures I basically do takeoffs of, like the weird telephone one with the people talking to each other. You know, Rosie the Riveter. Help me.
You're going to hang yourself. Who are you talking about? Are you talking about Norman Rockwell?
Thank you. Yes. He's just like, your stuff looks a lot like Rockwell. And I was like, okay.
Your stuff doesn't look like Norman. That one photo looks like,
yeah,
Norman,
and
Rockwell,
maybe the one like at the diner and that kind of stuff. And I was like,
no,
but he was
no.
saying it in such a way that like it was perhaps a bad thing. And I was like, dude, if you compare my work that looks anything like Norman Rockwell, I am fine with taking that. I'll take that as a compliment. You know, I have no problem with your comparing my to one of the geniuses of the 20th century. I couldn't tell if he meant that as a negative or a positive thing. I guess we'll find out. Maybe he'll write in.
Freddie says, not Norman, Pete Rockwell.
Pete Rockwell, that's true.
His lesser known cousin, Skeeter Rockwell.
Skeeter. It was funny. Anyway, enough of that. Where do you want to go from here? You want to talk about your chef's table thing or what?
Okay, this is good. Okay. So, wait, do you want to talk about the fact and fiction thing?
I guess we could talk about this. Maybe we can, and I'll put a link to it in the show notes. We talked in the past a lot.
We will talk about Chef's Table, though.
We'll get to that in a second.
Okay. All right.
Remember we were talking about the World Press Photo Awards?
Yeah, we've talked about that a couple times.
Right, and people got to the finals, and then they got kicked out because it turned out they messed around with the pictures. Remember that?
Right. Okay.
There was a really great article in the New York Times Lens blog this week where they asked a bunch of people, including the jury chair, one of the jury chair members of the 2015 World Press Photo Awards, and a woman named Maggie Strieber, Phil Talendo, Santiago Leon, basically a bunch of photographers and things, including an artistic director of a magazine, that kind of stuff. Like basically what photojournalism means, right? And what the new strategies and visual storytelling techniques are being used in the modern world and how that will change how we see photojournalism. And it's really interesting, and I'll let you guys read it later. And it's funny, they link to one of the Timothy O'Sullivan pictures from, I think, Gettysburg, where, mm-hmm. you know, it's like some dead sniper who got shot or whatever next to a rock. And of course, you know, oh, maybe he had moved the body or maybe he just shot it as it was. But one of the points that these people say in here is that photojournalism of, say, war is in many ways dead. This guy, Phil Teledano, he says, I think photojournalism is dead. The language that developed over the last 50 or 60 years has become irrelevant because we've seen it all before. Instead of emphasizing, it reduces. The idea and the intent is still very much alive, but it's not enough to show up and hope that extraordinary thing happened in front of your lens. Why? Because the whole world is a camera with an internet connection. So basically, he's just saying we're just so inundated with images all the time of war zones and strife and the people right now in Tibet and all this kind of stuff that it's so difficult to make any one image stick in anyone's mind, right?
Right. It almost has to be a series or
right. Yeah.
To tell the entire story.
Interestingly enough, he points to Tim Hetherington's Sleeping Soldiers project and that kind of mm-hmm. stuff, where it's like, okay, well, we pay attention if you can stack these things up and tell a story that's more than just one image, because yeah, that image might be on the newspaper tomorrow morning, but how many pictures do we see like that every day? And how many of them do you actually remember of the last year, you know, that you ever saw on the homepage of CNN? It's not that many.
Right.
You know,
I tend to gravitate more towards like the Lens blog where they'll do almost like a photo essay.
Yep.
You know, I first started taking notice of things like this with the stuff that Dai Sagano was doing for and Kochi Hernandez for the San Jose Mercury News.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, because like, you know, then it's interesting because then you can get more of What's interesting about that is that you then get more of the perspective of the artist, of the photographer, in a series of 15 shots or a dozen shots than you do in a single shot.
Right.
Which is interesting because then the photographer becomes part of the story in a way that they probably weren't 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
most newspaper photographers in the 50s or 60s, they were just going and shooting, you know, oh, this guy got killed, I'm going to go take a picture of it or whatever, what have you, you know.
Right. The one shot of the aftermath right. of it rather
but,
than.
But no one yeah. knew who the hell they were, right. you know. No one knew who the New York Times photographers were in the 70s. You know, now we photographers, at least in the modern times, we know who these guys are when they put stuff out there. You know, as if they are personalities in themselves, which is actually really interesting. There was who was I was reading. Oh, you know what it was? It was that that's another good thing on Netflix when we get to your show is the Showrunners documentary. Did you see this?
I just started watching that last night, actually.
Really interesting Netflix is documentary up on Netflix about guys like Joss Whedon and all those kind of guys who run television shows. You know, yeah. the people in charge
Ronald
of
Moore,
a show.
Yep.
The guy who's the guy from The Sopranos who did that? Chase? David Chase, isn't it?
No, I think so.
Yeah. Anyway,
he's in there. The people that did The Good Wife are in yeah. there.
And they make a point even in that. They said, you know what? 20 years ago, no one cared who ran a show.
Right.
And now
right.
shows are by the people who brought you Sopranos. David Chase is doing this show. We have to go watch this show as if that means something nowadays, you know, which I'm sure it does. But no one thought about that stuff before. It's like all those right. people have stepped out of the shadows. And in some ways, the same thing is happening in photography where, you know, some really great news photograph will come out and a lot of people like us will know, will look down and go, oh, yeah, I like that guy's work where we didn't right. even looked at the byline before.
You know? Right. Right.
Anyway, it's a good article and a lot of different perspectives. And so go check it out. I'm going to put in the link in the show notes. It's called Fact and Fiction in Modern Photography. It's good.
Yeah.
All right. So tell me about your thing. Your
okay.
food.
So
tell me about your food fetish, Jeffrey.
Well, okay. So I've been watching a lot of documentary films on different things. I watched Supermensch, yeah. The Legend of Shep Gordon, which if you haven't seen that, it's terrific. Shep Gordon, agent to musicians, rock stars, but also is the guy credited with kind of starting the celebrity chef craze
phenomenon.
Movement phenomenon. Yeah. Yeah.
Phenomenon.
John Keatley tweeted about this new show on Netflix called Chef's Table. And okay. and specifically, he was commenting on what a great journey it was showing how the chef in the first episode, a guy by the name of Massimo Bottura, yeah. I think is his name, Massimo Bottura, how he kind of found his passion and found his way to not only what he loves, but really starting to change an industry. And I thought it was just, first of all, it's shot really well. They're interesting stories. But I thought it was interesting how this guy Massimo wanted to do something different, wanted to do something, yes, to put his name, you know, sort of out into the world.
Right.
But at his core, it was a reminder of his childhood. He was the smallest of his brothers and they would kind of come after him and you know, sort of torture him. And he would go hide in the kitchen under the table where his grandmother was cooking, and she would sort of defend him, right?
Okay.
She would tell him to leave him alone. So he said that he got this perspective on cooking from underneath the table. So he was always in the kitchen seeing his grandmother cooking, and this sort of has inspired the way he approaches his cooking.
Now he turns all his dishes upside down.
That's right. That's right. So he's I see what you did there. So you know, he was saying at his core, he wants to sort of pay homage to all of the grandmothers and cooking, because in Italy, he lives in Modena, Italy. And this food critic says if you ask people in Italy, you know, who makes the best food, they're going to say, you know, their mother or their grandmother.
Sure.
And that's what he was trying to do, but he was trying to sort of put his own take on it, and that was met with yes, disapproval, but almost contempt. Like, how could you change up these sort of hallowed recipes?
Yeah, they're perfect as they are. They've been refined for generations. Why are you messing with them?
Right, right. But that gets kind of to the core of art, right? Everybody wants to do something sure. different, and maybe at the cost of tearing down some of the old stuff.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I want to do XYZ, but I've got to destroy, you know, or at least severely alter what came before me to find my voice.
Yeah.
So it's a really interesting show, and each episode is profiling a different chef. And I've only watched three of them so far, but
these are half hour long.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. They are, like I said, really interesting so far. There's a lot of interesting television out right now.
There's almost too much to watch.
Yeah.
You know, it's getting to the point with the documentaries and the television shows. They're as bad as 500 pixels where it's like, oh my God, there's so many things I want to see. I can't really watch all of those things at once.
But the quality of television is so good. And they talk about that in Showrunners.
Yep.
And I have a friend named Jude who is a producer, writer, director. And one of his very good friends is Steven Soderbergh. And Soderbergh has said that the best film right now is happening on television.
Mm-hmm.
That the best writing, the best acting, the best stories.
I will say, though, the only thing that I wish they did on television more, there's this, you know, have you watched this new Daredevil show? Have we discussed that?
I binge watched the entire season. Yes.
Okay. I think we have one last one to watch.
It's dark.
Yeah, it's dark. It's really well done, but I almost wish sometimes they would actually make them as 12-hour movies that end, as opposed to television, which has to set up another season. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
I wish people had the balls sometimes to just say, you know what? No, I'm going to tell a story. It's going to be 10 or 12 hours long, and I'm not going to set it up for 12 more seasons. You know?
See, that's kind of the way they do it in the UK.
Yeah, they do it more in the UK that way.
Where if the series had to end after Alan H. Yeah, Alan, you're right. Yes, more of the True Detective format. Yeah,
yeah,
great example.
Right. Yep,
True Detective. That story began and ended, and that's it. And we'll never hear from those characters again.
Yes,
I like that a lot.
It is because it's one of the things I really liked about Neil Gaiman is that he finished Sandman and then he walked away. But now it turns out he's like rebooting Sandman in some way. And I was like, no, Neil, just leave it alone.
Right.
Let it die. Move on to something else. You know, Alan Moore never wrote more Watchmen. It's what it is. And he walked away. And now it's this thing that we can look at as this point in time where this thing was created. And then other things were created afterwards. It didn't have to go on for 27,000 issues, you know?
Okay, well, let's bring this around to photography for
sure.
a second. Do you ever feel the urge to revisit characters that you've shot before, scenes that you've shot before? You go back and shoot the same people over and over again.
I do because they're handy and they're good subjects, you know.
Okay. So how do you reconcile if your goal that you and you've said this several times is to create kind of the go-to or the iconic picture of that particular person.
Yeah. How do I do if I go and shoot them multiple times?
Right. Well, are you still looking for that one because the last one didn't get it? Or what are you looking
for? It could be. Or in those cases, I'm doing stuff like conceptual stuff, which is sort of outside of that realm of sort of standard portraiture which I'm talking about when I say I want to take the great picture of that person. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't expect my friend Mary to use the picture of her hanging off the edge of my building as her picture, you know, that is she's known for. But I see those people as more actors in stories, you know, but I try not to do those stories multiple times. You know, it's like once it's funny because in my talk, I noticed that one of my drabbles is a girl sitting against a wall outside busking, like, you know. And then I did that other one of Todd Reynolds busking in the subway. And I'm like, wow, I repeated an idea once. I never really noticed that I repeated that. until last night.
If you look back over your work, you probably
there's probably a few of those things.
Several of them.
Yeah. But I didn't. I certainly didn't intentionally do that. Like, oh, this needs to be busker image number two. You know,
I have to
do one up on that.
Because then it becomes a series.
Yeah, and it's like, I mean, that's fine if you're really trying to do a series of buskers. I just that was never my intention. You know,
Where do you fall on the idea of a muse? Do you believe that there's a muse? You know, like for so many years, and he still does actually. Rankin and Heidi Klum. Do you like that idea of going back to the same models intentionally?
Well, you know what the nice thing about it is, like, you know, I use a lot of my dancer friends a lot, right? You know, Cisco and Iran show up in a lot of my pictures, and Conrad, right? But that makes sense because she lives with me. But
you guys live together?
Yeah, funny, right? A woman actually, you know, agreed to live with me. It was insane. You know, I go back to those people. Part of it is that it's, you know, it's like, okay, these are friends of mine who are willing to do these crazy things I asked them to do. And part of it is that we have a shorthand. You know, I've done enough stuff with them that they sort of know what I want before, you know, I don't have to start from scratch. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I mean, things like Heidi Klum, you're working with a beautiful model who's great in front of the camera, no matter whose camera she's in front of, you know, so that's a whole other thing. I don't really have any people like that who are models to be models and therefore, you know, make it easy for me in that way. Yeah, it's just interesting. I think that you go along your life and you work with a bunch of people and certain people are going to stand out to you as the kind of people you want to do more work with, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so you do more work with them and, you know, who would have thought 5 years ago that you and I would have talked for 250 hours, you know?
Right. Well, just that we've recorded. I mean, we've probably talked for another 200 hours beyond
offline.
That.
Right. You see what I'm saying? So I think that these things come, and I think in retrospect, you look at them as, oh, that person was his muse because look at all the pictures he took of her or whatever it is. And maybe he'll say that later in his life because it's convenient and it works out that way, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
So you don't think that there can be an intentional muse?
I guess there could be.
It's sort of happenstance?
I haven't found one specifically. Mm-hmm. Hey, speaking of which, a little side note. So somebody on Twitter the other day says, hey, at some bookstore or book thing in London, that's one of my favorite at Bill Wadman photographs. Right? And
wait, you lost me. This was just some random tweet?
Yeah. He just random tweet, Black Sun Book Review. That's one of my favorite at Bill Wadman shots. And he links to the picture of CC body painted into the wall.
Huh.
Right? And so I go over to the Black Sun Book Review Twitter feed, and they used that picture and turned it into a bunch of ads that they had on their Twitter feed.
Wow.
Yeah.
Ads for what?
They do, I think you pay them to get your book noticed. So here we go. Are you doing enough to get your book noticed? We are a team of avid readers and professional writers. We can provide ratings, reviews, and list votes. We love discovering new authors. We read, review all genres, and excited about getting started on your project. blacksunbooks@yahoo.co.uk.
Huh.
And they made a number of different ads, and they had put them up over like a 2-week period. So I sent them an email, you know, immediately saying, hey, you're using my copyrighted photo. A, stop. And B, you owe me some money for all the usage you've gotten out of it in the last 3 weeks. And I get an email back from the woman like 10 minutes later saying, oh, I didn't realize it was copyrighted. I took it down. It's like, lady, every picture you've ever seen is copyrighted by somebody. Like, unless it explicitly says that it is Creative Commons, it's owned by somebody, you know? So now I have to go like back and forth 12 rounds with this random person in London. But it's amazing, all this kind of stuff. And I was talking to my agent last night, apparently.
Why do you have to go back and forth? What are you paying your agent for? Why don't they go back
and forth? Well, I was talking to her about it last night, and we were talking about having her write something. Because I just wrote it because I was mad and I happened to notice it. But it becomes this thing where it's like, you know, why? It's crazy that I constantly have to like look around for people using my work without permission, you know? And I'm not saying somebody who's posting a picture of mine on their blog post where they're saying nice things about me. I'm talking about, you know,
a commercial endeavor.
A commercial use. Yeah, and that kind of stuff. It's like, man, it's like it's a whole other job, right? Where to like do searches for my more popular photos to see if somebody's using them for something. Just a whole, it's like a whole other thing we got to do. So anyway, pain in the neck.
Yeah. But it's kind of, it's kind of part and parcel of
Yep.
making images for a living now.
Yeah. 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 It's, yeah, it is. It is. And showing them online. It's just, it's always amazing when a commercial entity does it and doesn't realize that they can't do it, you know? And I love the idea that, oh, Jeffrey, I'm sorry. I didn't know it was copyrighted. I'll take it down and we're all good. It's like, no, because then everyone would just do that and wait for somebody to catch them and take it down. Like, you've gotten usage out of it. You've traded on my work, you know? So it'll be interesting. I'll let you guys know how it goes. It's just tricky, tricky, tricky.
Yeah.
You know. Anyway, what else we got?
Hey, some of the kids are meeting up in London.
I do believe that they are. Is Millie putting this together? Is that who's doing this?
I think Millie's driving it.
One of them. All right. So this is next Saturday, May 2nd. So this coming Saturday at noon at the Southwark Tavern, which is...
So they're just going to get drunk and then go shoot.
That's pretty much what Millie always does.
Wow. Okay.
Well, I mean, from my experience hanging out with Millie, Millie puts a few back and then we go take pictures. This is what she likes to do. Yeah, so it's at Borough Market at noon, more precisely the Southwark Tavern. And you guys should go. It's on South Bank over in the east there by the London Bridge.
10 people going?
Yeah, something like that so far who say they're going. So, hey, it says 15 and 7 maybe, so... If you are in London, go meet up with some On Taking Pictures people. I had a good time last night hanging out with On Taking Pictures people.
I was going to go to that.
To my talk?
No.
To the London thing?
don't be silly, Bill.
You're going to go all the way to London?
I was going to do that, but I'm going to be at Paris Photo, so I can't.
Oh, right. Paris Photos this weekend. Yep.
Paris Photos this weekend.
Yep.
Yay.
So go check that out. All right, so should we talk about these crit wall things?
Yeah. You know what? While we're on this, for those of you who may be in L.A. or Southern California, Paris Photo next weekend at the Paramount Pictures backlot. It is fantastic. It is bar none my favorite sort of photo show, expo, whatever you call it, fair that I've been to. Not that I've been to a ton of them, but... It started in L.A. They brought it to L.A. for the first time 2013, which was fantastic. That's where I got the chance to meet Gregory Crudson and talk to him for a few minutes. That was cool. And then last year was great, 2014. And this year, your friend Joni Sternbach is going
to
be
there. Oh, yeah. Joni Sternbach is going to be there. You can go talk to her.
So I'm going to say hi.
Yep.
She's doing a book signing.
Good.
Stephen Shore was there last year. Actually, a bunch of people were there last year. And it's a good time. So I'm going to meet up with Patrick there on Saturday.
Well, that should be fun. You should go meet up with some people. So go find Jeffrey and give him a hard time.
That's right. Yep. Go find me. Or just let me know you're going to be there. I'd love to meet up with you guys, whoever might be there.
You know what you should do? You should put on one of those things on your phone where it can constantly ticks your location on a map. You can do that and like allow people to see it for a couple hours.
What do you mean? Like find so my phone? Is that what it is?
Well, I think it's in Google Maps. You can basically share. There's a way to share your location to where people can go to a link and always kind of see your current location for a couple hours.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think there's a way to do it. Go look into it. But that could be useful because you're walking around and then people can be like, oh, he's over there in that place.
I don't know who's in Southern California. I mean, Sakasagawa's here, but he's San Diego. Mike, are you going to Paris Photo?
I'm sure there's more than a few people in listeners in Southern California. I'd be willing to bet.
More than just Mike?
Yeah. All right. You want to do some crit walls?
Yes. We were going to do this last week, but we didn't. Alan asks, are you thinking Latitude? Is that the app that you're talking about?
Oh, Latitude, I guess, kind of does that. But I'll figure it out when I'll find. We'll figure it out. But could be possible. See, he can't go. All right. So
Freddie says, just don't tell Bailward.
I know. This having a live feed of people's comments is a dangerous thing for us.
That's funny. Okay, so Crit Wall, first one.
Which one first?
David Gardner.
David Gardner's picture.
His ballet dancer. What do you think of this?
Why do I have to start?
Because you're the professional. I know. So that's Bill's comment on it. Raspberry. Yeah,
I think this picture is it's good. I like it. You know what I really like for some reason is this crazy shadow on the wall behind her because of the way the light's hitting her. Mm-hmm. It almost looks fake, but it's real. I kind of like it. I think it's good. I think that this picture might be better, like from a lower perspective, it might be more interesting. You know, so where she's up.
So you're kind of shooting up at her, giving her what, like a more of an illusion of height. Is that maybe why?
I think there's something about having the ground right there, or so much of the ground. Maybe have it tighter and a little less of the ground. You know, just so you see the bottom edge. Mm-hmm. Of the boards, like a little too much boards down the bottom. But I think it's interesting, the idea of getting her legs to be parallel with the bars is pretty cool.
See, I found the bars a little bit of a distraction. When I first looked at it, if I just glance at it, it was almost like she was resting somehow.
Right. So if you were lower, she would be above the bars, but also parallel with them. So that might actually be neat. Like you see how the two bars are separated by whatever, you know, 8 inches or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
If you could have her so her legs were 8 inches above the top bar.
Right.
Stacked bars like that. That would be kind of cool.
And you wouldn't have, I don't think you'd have to drop down very far.
No.
To get that change in perspective.
Like you'd sit down instead of standing up or whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like the light. I wonder, I guess he's using a flash to do that. Cause look how low the light's coming. Cause of the way the bars cast their shadows.
It's a little hot for me.
Yeah. Especially on her forearms there, on mm-hmm. her arms
and her they're right really leg. White.
Yeah. If you were going to do this, I mean, quote unquote for reals, you could have another light on the other side, just filling in the shadows, just a scooch, like 2 or 3 stops down from your key light.
Okay.
That way you don't have to worry about so much hard shadow on her face while still lowering your exposure such that you don't burn out her arms as much, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But yeah, it looks like he's done a fair amount of sharpening and stuff too. So, you might be able to get back some of that detail in her arm if you pull down the highlights or back off on the clarity a little bit. I mean, I think it's a cool picture. It's always fun when you have people who can do stuff like this, you know.
I mean, and she's got to be what, like
good subject,
3-4 feet off the ground.
Yeah, I was telling that joke last night that, you know, when you tell Cisco to jump, he says how high. You know, so I think a woman like this probably does something very similar.
Now, okay, this might be a dumb question, but would she do this from just standing, or is this in mid-flight from right to left?
I think she could probably do either, but she probably is moving right to left, if I had to guess.
Mm-hmm.
But I know from my limited experience that these people can also jump straight up and do that kind of stuff. So it could be either of them, you know. You could also do something crazy like use one of those little trampolines and then Photoshop the trampoline out, you know. It's kind of like what Carl Taylor did out.
Yeah,
I was just going to say
that's what Carl did at Iceland.
Yeah. Except this is like a dancer and not just a model, so she could probably even do more with it. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's a good photo. I think it's good. It could be really cool if you were lower, closer, maybe even more wide angle, slightly more wide angle, so that she's sort of filling the frame in a more dramatic way. It could be
kind of
cool.
So there's not so much space either side of her? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, like I always love, like, even crop it square, it kind of gets interesting, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I always like pictures like this when things are really symmetrical against a flat surface like this. I tend to do this myself, but I'm trying to break. I find it sort of a safe habit that I'm trying to break on my own time. So, like, the idea of imagine, see the lower left-hand corner, the sort of whitish floorboard that's coming up from the lower left-hand corner?
Yes.
What if he was setting up right there on that board, you know, looking up at her this way where, you know, it's like up and one leg's towards him with a slightly wider angle lens and one leg's back and you get sort of like a perspective distortion thing.
Mm-hmm,
you know, that could
mm-hmm.
also be really dramatic as well, you know. Anyway, it's good.
I'm sorry, did you just say dramatic?
Yeah, I thought it would be funny. I'm hilarious.
You really are.
Yeah.
All the kids are saying so.
What's the other one?
The other one.
Oh, Derek's picture of a girl.
Derek's picture of Sam.
Which one? Yeah, that's the girl with the camera looking up?
Right, kind of looking. We're looking down on her. I like these types of perspectives.
I do too. Yeah,
they're very interesting to me, and because you get this like you were just talking about with the dancer, you get this interesting foreshortening that happens that really kind of just changes how we experience these
things.
Well,
and it makes you notice their face more, right? Because their face is bigger in comparison to the rest of their body. And her 5D Mark something with a 40mm pancake lens. I think that's what that is. Am I wrong? Right?
I don't know.
You gotta let us know. Yeah, I think this one is good. I think you could crop it a little tighter. It would be interesting, like crop it a third in. Mm-hmm. Even maybe like cut the scooch off the top of her head and kind of come up by her hand on the bottom. I would even go a little further on the contrast and sort of darken the background even more. So who's the guy in London that we like that we used as photographer of the week one time? Brett something? You know what I'm talking about?
Brett Walker.
You know how he does those like super high contrast things?
Yeah.
This would look really cool like that. Because then it would just be like her face and sort of her upper neck line against like a really dark background.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be kind of cool. And I'm sure
I love the contrast of her jawline against kind of her shoulder and it's really
and you could
cool.
pull all that out, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I feel like this is a good capture. I think you could do more with it in post if you really wanted to.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a good one too. Yeah.
Okay. Hey, just so you know, like I said, we're testing this live thing and the test version. No. We've got basically 7 minutes left.
Okay.
So we'll be close. We'll be close. We may cut off a little bit.
That's all you want to say? That's it? That's the point you want to make.
Are you harshing me?
No. I was just wondering.
We need an assignment.
Yeah, we do. We need an assignment.
I know. Well, you've come up with a couple, so think of something.
Did you see this picture I did the other day of the girl holding the sandwich?
Yes. That was pretty funny.
Yeah.
That was her idea, yeah?
That was her idea. She came to me and said, Bill, I really want to make this picture where I'm like the Madonna, but instead of holding baby Jesus, I'm holding a large sandwich.
Yeah.
And I said, okay.
Madonna sure. of the sandwich.
Yeah. Anyway, I was just thinking maybe we could do something food related in some way.
Food related?
Yeah.
All right. Well, think about a hashtag and I'm going to talk about you guys killing it
in
fashion. There's some really cool fashion pictures up here and different takes on fashion. I hate to give him credit, but Gardner, I love that shot of the signs and the typography. That's very cool. And I love the Hugh Talman shot. Did you see that? The redhead with the scarf?
I'm going right now.
Dig it.
Yeah, Gardner's picture's great.
Yeah.
Hugh's picture's great too.
Isn't that good? Tanya, cool shots of shoes and skinny jeans.
Yeah.
They're just, you know, and great market shots from a couple weeks ago. And just, I really love seeing, you know, how you guys are putting things up there. Dennis, his shot of a market in Budapest, the great market hall.
I love that one. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, looks amazing. Yeah. Really good stuff. And Bill's going to work on an assignment for this week.
Let's do hashtag sandwich and see what people come up with. What do you think?
Sandwich?
Of that? Yeah. Let's go specific.
Sandwich.
Is that crazy? Because, see, it doesn't have to be food. There's all kinds of, you know what I mean?
Right. Right.
Let's try it.
It could be meaty.
Yeah.
It could be fishy.
It could be Oreo-y.
A sandwich cookie.
See what I'm saying?
Well, let's see. Does a Fig Newton qualify? No, because that's fruit and cake.
I like Fig Newtons.
I do too.
Am I wrong?
But they're not called Fig Newtons anymore. Now they're just called Newtons.
Well, they're called Newtons, but then it's the original fig version. You know?
Right.
Yeah.
Sandwich is the, that's it. That's it.
All right. I'll put that in there.
All right. Yeah.
Photographer of the week. Oh, no. Bad. Bad, bad, bad. That was terrible. Okay. This week's photographer of the week is actually I pulled from the group because somebody on the group was talking about him, and let me pull it up so I can actually do this correctly. They were talking about his name is Franco Fontana, who is an Italian photographer who is sort of known for these long-lensed, flattened, foreshortened landscapes of the Italian countryside.
And nudes of women in the 80s in pools.
Yep, he does that too. He did that too, yeah. And it's really, really amazing stuff because they end up looking... You made a joke that it kind of looks like the Windows XP wallpaper.
Right, that bliss shot.
Yeah,
and which is apparently the most popular photograph in the world or something.
Well, it's certainly, yeah, probably the most noticed, right? You know, right. Of photographs in the world. Which is just really, really great stuff. And I just, there's something about these pictures that I can stare at for a long time. I don't know what it is.
They end up almost looking like some of the Matisse cutouts.
Yep. Yeah. They almost look like paper cutouts. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
And he was saying that he did a lot of the pictures. There's a video I'll put in the show notes. He talks about where things are darkened and stuff. He's like, I didn't do this in Photoshop. It was clouds that went overhead that, you know, fell over this area.
Oh, wow.
He's like, and then 6 seconds later, it would fall over the next color down the thing. And there are these whole, there's this whole area apparently in Italy of these fields, and there's no houses. It's just fields that get worked. And these are all agricultural areas.
Italy.
Yeah. Wow. And so, yeah, this guy's been around for a long time. He was born in 1933, so he's, what, 80 years old now, 82. Mm-hmm. But he began shooting as an amateur photographer when he was about 30, and then he started showing in some exhibitions and stuff, and now he's, you know, shot for everybody, advertising campaigns for everybody, and is in over 60 museum collections around the world, that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, it's beautiful work.
Really cool work. And there's some really good video. There's a good video I'm going to put in the show notes, including a video which was linked to in the group. And I can't find for the life of me who it was that shared it, but I will find it.
I like his architecture work, too.
Yeah. Okay. It was Martin Rotz.
Okay.
Who put it up. There's a video on YouTube of what do you think of these videos on YouTube where they point a camera at a book and they just flip through the book?
Ted Forbes does this with art of photography, but I love the way Ted Forbes does it because he's also, he's injecting some knowledge, some history, some commentary. It's not just flip, flip, flip. So what are you talking about? Are you talking about just a silent flipping?
This guy's doing a flip, flip, flip. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't like that. I don't like that. I like the way Ted Forbes does it.
You don't like it because you feel like it's ruining the book. And just, if you want to look at the book, go get the book. Or, do you think it's morally wrong, or you just think that you just don't like watching them flip through a book?
I appreciate more of the commentary and a little bit of insight into what I'm looking at rather than just a silent sort of slideshow.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah.
And again, I think that's where Ted does a really great job. Point where I'd like to rip off how he does that.
Well, then you should definitely rip it off. But anyway, there's a link in here I'm going to put in for photoandcontemporary.com and his page, and the grid of them is just nuts. Like when you see them all next to each other, how intense the colors are. It's just crazy. Right. They're beautiful. I would love one of these prints. This would be really cool. I wonder how much...
We just stopped, but I just started it again. So
you're theoretically popping back on.
In theory, we should... Listeners, are you still listening? Can you still hear stuff? Because I restarted it.
All right. I'm sure they will. What do you think of, let me ask you a question though, the pictures, if you scroll down, there's some that are of architecture like this sort of foreshortened architecture of really colorful stuff over in Italy. Does that stuff do anything for you?
They almost look like
paintings to me, those.
Yeah. Yeah. I spent, you know, how many years have I spent as a graphic designer? So this, this ticks that sort of, you know, design and color
block stuff. Yeah. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. That ticks that box for me very, very strongly.
Yeah.
His use of color and shadow and form is, I think, is terrific. Yeah. I really like it a lot. I had no idea who this person was. So yeah, I learned something new.
Franco Fontana.
Franco Fontana.
There's a bunch of Italian photographers.
Tony Fontana.
Really good. Tony Fontana. Wait, that's a different guy. All right. What happens if people want to get a hold of us, Jeffrey?
Podcast at ontakingpictures.com.
Yeah.
You tweet at Bill Wadman.
Yep.
I tweet at Jeffrey Sidoris. Hey, I want to thank the folks at Kelby. They sent me a copy of Jay Mazel's new book.
Oh, how is it?
It's good. A couple little niggles about it, but I'm almost done with the review of it.
What's the name of it? It's all about the Benjamins. It's not about
It's not about the F-stop.
There you go.
It's not about the F-stop.
Because it's all about the Benjamins.
That's right. I want to see from Jay, and this is if I have a the photos in it are beautiful, as you would expect from Jay. I mean, he's got a very long and sort of illustrious career of making beautiful shots.
Does it span his career? Is it sort of a retrospective kind of thing?
Not really. And okay. I mean, I would like to see some of the older stuff in there. There is definitely, you know, a good breadth of work visible, but it feels too much like a textbook to me. Mm-hmm. Rather than,
well, this is for Kelby, right?
Yeah, like I said, the photos in it are great. There are a lot of great insights into or stories around how photographs came to be, and you know, I'm not sure who the audience is for this book. Are you trying to make a sort of art photo book, or are you trying to make a how-to instructional book? And
trying to get both of them.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm not sure. But his work is stunning. There's no getting around that. He's another one like this Franco Fontana. And that's what kind of reminded
Franco
me of
Franco Fontana.
He's another one that really, is able to, beautifully capture, color and shape and use it really effectively in photographs.
It's funny. I think I prefer street photography when it is not a lot of people in it and when it's with longer lenses like that, you know, because I see a lot of what Jay does where it's like there's a person in it, but the person's not massively important who it is and stuff. It's just sort of the shape of the person or whatnot, you know?
Right. Right.
And he uses a long lens, you know, he uses one of those 28x300 zooms that Nikon makes, you know? It's funny, you know, when you go to his class for a week, he makes you use just one lens for the whole week. It's like one of his things. And it's like, you know what, dude, you're using one lens, but it goes from 28 to 300.
Right.
It's like no skin off your back, but it's good. Excellent. I'll look forward to checking out that book as well. Anything else?
I think that's it.
All right.
Yeah. If anybody's going to be at Paris Photo, tweet me, let me know. I'd love to meet up. Cool. And if not, we'll see you next week.
All right.
Talk to you soon. You have anything? You okay?
No, I'm good.
All right. See you next week. Thanks for listening, everyone. And again, if you like the live thing, if you were one of the people listening live, tweet us, you know, email us, let us know what you think of it. Is it a good idea or was it just a fun one-off?
Yep. Good. See you.
All right. See you next week.
Going on and on the way we are for so something's wrong. As this way, say what you want to say, though I know your words will lay me out. So I can hear you think out loud. Going through your thoughts the way I have. This way, say what you wanna say. I know what you will say will leave me out, but I should hear it said aloud. Everything we tried to make it right made it wrong. Was there